And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, June the 22nd, 2017, 1:13 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Scott Spears, along with you for a second hour of the Now program on this Thursday. And today we have a very interesting guest, first-time visitor to our microphones. He is running for the representative position in the 4th Congressional District against current Republican Representative Jim Jordan. That is our representative, by the way, if you didn't know, here in Marion. And if there's been a newspaper article, and if you didn't read it, he is 33 years old, and he has was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease 3 years ago. We're happy and proud to welcome to these microphones for the first time Andrew Mackey of Richwood. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. Hey, thanks for having me up on the long drive up Route 4. It's always a pleasure. Normally, I'm coming up this way to get Victor's, so it's nice to be able to go to other parts of the town.
I'm glad you're able to stop by here. First of all, I was going to ask you, because the article I read didn't really say, are you running as a Democrat?
Yes, I am.
Running as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
In your mind, I always find this fascinating. What makes you a Democrat?
So one of the interesting parts is, and this will take you back a ways, but when I was in the second grade, I actually wrote the newspaper in my hometown asking the political editor, what is the difference between a Republican? And at the time, I said a Democrat. I figured it out throughout my life. But part of it for me is I think that inherently, when I used to work in civic education, I think that there's a balance between public good and private interest. And at the end of the day, they're not wrong, either one. However, people tend to side on that spectrum. For me, in Democratic politics, I tend to identify as someone who looks out for the public good. So, you know, while I can understand and appreciate folks who, you know, are concerned about that, but they're very, like, least common denominator. For me, it's about public good, and that's why I identify as a Democrat.
Is this the first time you've run for office?
It's not. So when I was 18 years old, I was the Democratic nominee for state representative in Delaware County. And it was an interesting story. When I first arrived in Delaware County, it was my senior year of high school. My parents had moved from the Detroit area. We came down and I had worked on pretty much every campaign. Rather than making friends that summer, I volunteered for the Democratic Party. I was a 16-year-old who was excited about Al Gore. So I worked with the Democratic Party. And then I actually asked our county chair at the time, I would say, hey, I would love the opportunity to just maybe work on one campaign. And he said, sure, give me a second. We'll find out some stuff. A couple days later, they asked if I would be the candidate for state rep. And it was a great experience. I had a good time. I actually was fortunate enough to have a pretty nice opponent as well. He also had ran as a younger age. It was John Peterson, who's now the treasurer of Delaware County. But, you know, it was a good experience. My opponent did spend more money at Bob Evans than I raised. But, you know, that's par for the course. But it was a good experience.
What did you learn from that experience?
So part of it is I'm also a big advocate for getting younger people involved in politics in general. I've been involved my whole life, my whole adult life at that point. You know, for me, it comes down to being able to have a conversation with people and express why you believe what you believe. And I think that that's something that in an age of politics where people have become more marketing, they've become more of a brand, they become more of a, you know, I got to watch out for my corporate shareholders and, you know, that kind of a way where they have certain things that they want. So for me, it was really empowering and in a very Republican district, too, much like the 4th Congressional District. My whole life, I've spent working on areas that trying to advance Democratic ideals in places where they don't normally consider Democrats. So I've always enjoyed that.
What spurred this run?
So for me, it came down to, you know, I always thought I'd have a chance. After I was 18, I didn't run for a while. I was still involved, but I always thought I'd have an opportunity to run maybe when I was in my 50s or my 60s. You know, I was very fortunate. My wife and I had bought a house in Richwood. My wife worked at a library. I was working for the probate court in Union County. And I was very excited about that. And my diagnosis kind of came on as a sudden sort of thing. I just wasn't feeling good for about a year. And I wasn't really sure what was wrong with me. And that diagnosis, in a lot of cases, people who experience that, you know, young onset Parkinson's, it's one of those where, you know, Michael J. Fox is pretty much the only person that they know under the age of, you know, 50 with it. So for me, I viewed it as an opportunity to start having a conversation about a few things in this country. I wanted to be empowered. I wanted to take advantage of a dialogue. So for me, it was, you know, talking about healthcare, talking about how we treat one another, just things like that. So for me, that was sort of my impetus was this could be a chance for me to physically go out there and do this. while I still can, and I had a passion to do it, so I wanted to.
Now, this seat is a big seat.
Yes.
It's a Washington seat. Mm-hmm. It's a member of Congress, and it's a gentleman who's been in this seat a long time, Republican, and usually wins his elections the last few times with more than 60% of the vote. Did that detour you or go into your thinking at all?
Not really. Part of it, too, is that I wanted to, you know, there's always been a kind of a conversation amongst Democrats in this part of the state about secret handshakes and, you know, winks and nods, knowing who you are. Part of me was trying to make people realize that we do have more of a sense of, you know, who we are. And we have elected Democrats in this part of the state. You know, Marion has elected Democrats. You know, the people in Union County have elected Democrats. We've elected Democrats here. We know them, you know. And I think part of it was I thought that I could break through that nationalization of local politics. Like, what I mean by that is, you know, having that dialogue of, you know, I'm not Chuck Schumer from New York. I'm not Nancy from San Francisco. I'm Andy from Richwood. And here's my brand of progressive politics and where we can have a direct point of difference with somebody like Congressman Jordan.
What is your brand of progressive politics?
Sure. For me, it's so one of the things I've always kind of been brought up with is, you know, as a people sort of flexing that empathy muscle for one another. And for me, you know, if I had to really break down my campaign, it's focused on, you know, healthcare, the heroin epidemic, and housing, the three H's. Now, part of that is just because I think that those are opportunities where I feel that government does already have a role and has had a role. And there's a direct point of difference between myself and the congressman about what that role needs to be. And for me, it's that we can have government that is working for people in the 4th Congressional District in those three areas specifically.
Healthcare. What are your differences with Representative Jordan?
So one of the main things, too, is, you know, one of those situations for me, at least there's multiple ways. So in a perfect situation, I would like to see Medicare expanded for all. That's one of those things where we have the system in place.
Single payer.
Correct. We have the system in place. I think that there's also a dialogue about the freedom that would produce for people who want to go out and become entrepreneurs and start their own businesses. You don't have to have a dialogue anymore about, well, you know, I'm not being treated fairly. I would like to go start my own construction business or landscaping business. And I'm not sure I can do that, you know, because we have to have a conversation now. If the business fails, my children are also not going to have insurance. So for me, it's let's empower people that way. In terms of the current situation with Congressman Jordan, a main one for me personally is the pre-existing conditions that he wanted and lobbied for in the AHCA. Now, for me, that situation was personal in that sense. When I talk about folks with pre-existing conditions being put into high-risk pools, I'm not having a conversation about a hypothetical person. I'm talking about myself, who does freelance work in various sort of design, graphic design areas, and my wife, who is on a, you know, a public employee insurance plan. And it's not like we took those jobs. It's not like my wife took that job because she wanted to make bank and work at the public library. Like, she wanted to serve people kind of in the same situation that I did. And, you know, if they want to raise those premiums, they're going to price people out of having health care in this country. And I know that's just, you know, it's from my perspective, but it's other people too. So that was a direct point of conflict in terms of the congressman's stance on that.
So you are on Obamacare.
I'm technically, how I'm not on Obamacare, how I'm on it is in the way that people with pre-existing conditions cannot have a higher rate from who is employed. So I'm actually on my wife's insurance at this point because, you know, we went that route. But how it could be is, you know, down the road, if those laws are changed, right now it's to not prevent discrimination against people who have pre-existing conditions. And in my case, you know, it's Parkinson's. But in other cases, it's like type 1 diabetes. You know, it's not like you went to the big vending machine of life and you made the choice B7 and you meant to get this and you ended up with a pre-existing condition. So for me, it's to protect that sense of, you know, an insurer saying, well, you know, he's got this. Let's just crank it up. And suddenly we're kept out of that. The ACA, in terms of the protections it's put in, you know, I don't think it gets talked a lot about Obamacare. It gets talked a lot about, you know, this situation. I think people tend to forget that it really does create a lot of freedoms for people who wouldn't have had them before in terms of starting businesses or having, you know, affordable insurance, like good insurance. And, you know, it was ironic in the sense that the day after the bill passed, the congressman was in Marysville and he was at Frisch's meeting with Republican groups to talk about how proud he was of that bill. You know, there was groups going there to talk with him and to protest that or to try to chat with him. But for me, the funny part is I couldn't go to it because I was seeing a specialist down in Columbus because I was permitted to do that. So it was kind of night and day in that sense.
Interestingly enough, today is the day that the Republicans in Senate have unveiled their bill.
Yes.
Their bill would basically, as we understand it, give it to the state legislature in each state to make mm-hmm. their decision on what they would want to do. And most likely in Ohio, with a highly Republican state legislature, could limit pre-existing conditions, eliminate it. This would be before you even get to the election. This bill will go up for a vote in the Senate. If that happens, what could you do? What do you fear?
So part of it is, it's just, you know, it would drastically change, not just mine, but, you know, millions of Americans around the country would suddenly be at the whim of putting a profit incentive on your health. For me, you know, the situation was, you know, Governor Kasich did the Medicaid expansion. You know, there's another part of that, though, in Ohio, is that, you know, we have communities like where I live, where, you know, the nearest hospital is 15, 20 minutes away. So, you know, we need to have hospitals in these parts of the state that, you know, can service people and to treat people. And the Medicaid expansion really, really helps with that. So, you know, it's, to me, it's almost like a passing of the buck. It's like an abdication of authority by the people in Congress to just sort of say, well, you know, it's a hard discussion and we have elections to deal with. So let's just let the state legislature do it. It's kind of like what they did with the cuts at the state level when the governor was first elected, and they started, you know, pushing it down to local and municipalities to kind of make those decisions. And, you know, they could say at the end of the day, well, we didn't raise your taxes. You know, they could say at the end of the day, we didn't, you know, this bill wasn't as mean as the president put it. But at the end of the day, we know what's going to happen. Like, we know that, you know, they're going to make these decisions based on a very cold calculus that doesn't include, you know, human life.
Republicans can only lose two votes in the Senate mm-hmm. for this not to pass. Do you think it will pass?
You know, I'm optimistic that it won't pass because I think that there is currently a lot of pressure. But I wouldn't be surprised if it did, because a lot of people, I think, are seeing nationally the trend of, you know, bucking the system, bucking your party, you know, going with what you think is right. You know, and I think the people that I'm hopeful for that'll do it are the ones who are in those Senate districts or Senate states that have an election this year. You know, and I think that's something that they're having to consider is, you know, the people who could be vulnerable in those seats. These are situations that they're not just playing with principle, or they're not playing with it. They're actually looking ahead to November 2018 and saying, is this vote going to cost me my job in the Senate? So I hope it doesn't. I hope that there are two Republicans who would stand up for this, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does.
I want to talk about the Parkinson's because you're 33 years old, mm-hmm. a young guy. And you got the diagnosis 3 years ago, so yep. you were 30, mm-hmm. 30 years old. Does anybody else in your family have this?
So unfortunately for me, my family has grown up in a very poor part of Kentucky, and all the men usually die before they're 50. You know, heavy history of smoking, heavy history of, you know, that kind of labor. My father is the first in my family and the male side to actually surpass the age of 54. So he is 50. He's probably going to be mad if I say it, but he's going to be 57 this year, and he doesn't have it. So at this point, it's one of those situations where, you know, I will say on the Parkinson's front, you know, in a lot of the groups that I talk with in support groups, it's really interesting that because of the good work of people like Michael J. Fox's foundation, we're starting to understand more about how people come down with Parkinson's. You know, with heart disease, you can get it from a variable. You can get it from environment. You can get it from your genetics. You know, there's different ways, and then they can treat it based on that. Unfortunately, with Parkinson's, they just kind of have a catch-all. And the medication that people take for Parkinson's, the medication that I'm on, was invented in 1967, like before we landed on the moon. And it's the same medication that, you know, a 70-year-old has that, you know, that I take. It's Sinemet. And, you know, it's one of those situations where I'm thankful for the sense that I'm living in a time where people are having a dialogue about it. One of my friends, when I first had told him about my diagnosis, asked me what my humor level was about it. And I said, it's fairly good. And he said, well, you're lucky that you have such a handsome, well-liked, charismatic spokesperson like Michael J. Fox leading the charge for you.
You said that you were not feeling well for a year. Mm-hmm. What were you feeling like?
So one of the interesting parts for me was people usually associate Parkinson's with a tremor right off the bat. Now, I do have a slight tremor. But for me, my first symptoms were sort of symptoms of fatigue, muscle stiffness, things that you wouldn't normally associate. And I'm not someone who WebMDs. So, you know, because I probably would have looked at it and been like, I have all types of things. So for me, it took a while of, you know, why am I feeling this way? You know, I was doing, you know, cardiovascular exercising to try to get myself, you know, going better. And then eventually I kind of had a balance issue, and that balance issue led me to falling. And that was kind of a trigger. And it wasn't until I went to a specialist who, you know, after a couple of, you know, a long time of, you know, could it be this, could it be this, I went to a specialist, and, you know, after a few visits, they're like, oh yeah, you have Parkinson's disease. Like, you have all the symptoms of that, you know, so we'll get you on your stuff and we'll get you on your way. The tremor part comes about from taking the medication. So like over time, the more you take of that medication, the more likely it is that you'll start to see that traditional Parkinson's tremor. So it's kind of a catch 22.
You were 30 years old, married, working.
I just bought a house.
Just bought a house. You go to the doctor and he says you have Parkinson's. Tell me about that day.
So I actually took a picture of the office that day as a reminder of myself of where I was and how low that felt. You felt very alone. You look at the faces of Parkinson's in this country, you know, and it's a traditionally a very gray disease. And I looked at it as an opportunity to have dialogue with people about various things. So one of the interesting parts that I really appreciated was, you know, we were talking about different types of medicines and just, you know, kind of, you know, talking about that in support groups. But, you know, it was one of those where I was in almost a sense, to be completely candid, I was kind of relieved in a way to know what I was facing and to know that something was going on and to know how to go about it. You know, so I was doing physical therapy. I started, you know, learning how to do stretching. If anybody has ever heard of segmental rolling, it's probably the single greatest back stretch you'll ever experience. It's so nice. But you kind of learn that stuff. And for me, it was kind of to be like, okay, this is what I'm up against. This is what I'm doing. This is what we're looking at. You know, and I have a great partner in my wife. She's a very, very strong young woman. And it's been a sense of like, you know, taking it on. And I really appreciate the opportunity to do that. I always say to people, I wouldn't wish this on anybody, but if it had to happen to somebody, I'm glad it was me, because I want to be able to show what people are capable of doing. And this was before, you know, all this political stuff.
It's very interesting, because I would imagine that the two people we most associate Parkinson's disease with are Michael J. Fox and Muhammad Ali.
Correct.
Muhammad Ali was in his 50s when the diagnosis came. Mm-hmm. And he lived to 73 or 74, I think, when he died last year, which I think was from complications of Parkinson's.
Correct.
Michael J. Fox, we haven't even actually seen for a while. And
yes,
the last time we saw him, he was somebody who did get it in his late 30s, I think. And he is now, I think, just over 50. And we don't see him anymore.
Yes.
And I imagine that's probably because of the Parkinson's disease. What are you facing?
So for me, in my level, kind of the nice part about being able to kind of focus on things that I love, and this again goes back to the healthcare discussion, but it's one of those where I have a lot of freedom to focus on my disease, you know, while still, you know, pursuing things that I love, like service, you know, acts of service for my community and trying to serve as a congressman. The ability to sort of take time and stretch when I need to, the ability to, you know, rest up and when my muscles are feeling sore, you know, I usually take, my wife has insisted that I take people with me on events just because they can keep an eye on me for, you know, but I feel really good. And it's great because it's been one of those things where I feel like my emotional satisfaction is really high being able to go out there and just talk with people. I love that. I'm a very social person. And so I spend a lot of time. The district is very big, and I spend a lot of time driving, and I spend a lot of time, you know, everywhere. And it's one of those moments where you can kind of be at peace, kind of driving, you know, on the back roads of Ohio, you know, as the sun's going down after going to an event about an hour away. And you just kind of think about how lucky you are sometimes. And even though it's this, you know, Parkinson's diagnosis, and sometimes my muscles are sore, and sometimes I have a tremor, and sometimes I need my cane, you know, I think about all the opportunities that I have out there that, you know, it's one of those situations where I'm able to spread more of a positive message to people because of it.
You say you have taken a lot of time to look into your disease.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, when you are diagnosed at 30,
yeah,
what is life supposed to be like? What is the road that you will face?
It can be fairly normal for a while. And, you know, one of the things that I'm not at the point where I'm eligible to get this, but they have a kind of a procedure called deep brain stimulation. And one of the interesting parts about that is they usually recommend it. One of the neurologists I'd spoken with said that they normally recommend it for younger people because it can improve your quality of life. Now, I'm not in the area where I would be getting that at this point. It's almost like a brain pacemaker that helps out with that because, you know, it's the dopamine issues and things like that. For me, you know, they say I can live a pretty normal life. The hard part for me was, you know, just kind of adjusting to it, kind of figuring out what my limitations are, where my limitations are, you know, what I can do, what I can't do. You know, I have a lot of issues sometimes with dexterity. You know, opening jars is a little bit more difficult than it used to be. You know, one of the interesting parts was your signature can sometimes become like more and more minuscule as you go along. So being able to work on that and make sure I don't lose that. So, you know, there's been some, you know, like little things like that you can lose. You know, over time, it's different in everybody. As one gentleman said in my support group who was in his 70s, Parkinson's is a designer disease is what he called it. You know, it's tailor made for everybody. So for me, you know, when I really, really push it, sometimes you can tell, like I get that, they call it like a bit of a facial masking where your face kind of, you know, but I can kind of feel those symptoms now and I can watch out for myself. So it's one of those where, you know, that's what it looks like. For me, it's great to have a support group of people. And again, you know, this goes back to part of the reason why I'm running these opportunities to see specialists and to see doctors and make it affordable for somebody who's, you know, at the time worked in the courthouse and, you know, with a wife who worked at the library, like this is affordable treatment that I'm able to get at this time and work with this stuff. And for me, that's kind of the things that I'm reminded of sometimes when I'm experiencing it.
If Obamacare goes away, what do you fear?
I fear that it's going to take away my ability to live in a house that I'm happy to live in a community that I love living in a part of the state that I love living in. You know, they always say, a lot of people look at it as it's just simple cut and dry, you know, like, oh, you know, if put the sick people in the pool. You know, and that's sort of the thing, though, is I've always been someone who thought about, you know, the greater good in that sense. We were talking initially about why I identify as a Democrat. For me, it's that conversation about, you know, just what we're doing for people. And for me, it's one of those where, you know, I like the idea of everybody kind of pitching in. We can all help each other out. You know, if somebody needs to have medical treatment in this country, which is such a rich, lucrative land of opportunity, you should be able to do that in America. You know, you should be able to have the freedom to go do certain things. So for me, I kind of fear losing that ability. You know, I used to fear that a lot. Like, I want to be a contributing person. I want to be somebody who, you know, makes a difference every day and tries to make a difference. And, you know, however I can, whatever I can, you know, and the nice part about doing like web design and things like that for me is that, you know, if I'm having trouble sleeping because of the medication, I can pop on the internet and go ahead and get to work and do some things that way, you know. And that's kind of the nice part about, you know, in Congress, it's the same way. Like you can always be working for people. And so for me, it's one of those where my fear would be losing the ability to be able to do things, you know, with a passion, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think that people don't look at it from that perspective. It's easy. It's an easy talking point to say, you know, let the sick pay for it. You know, it's an easy, easy conversation to have. But it's a lot more complex than that because there are real lives at stake.
What do you say to the people who say, to somebody like you, mm-hmm. There are people who abuse the system. Mm-hmm. That's why we don't need it. And doctors are not going to turn you away. And you can get on Social Security disability. What do you say to those people who say Obamacare is not necessary for those reasons?
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing, too, is I think that part of, for me, it's a larger conversation about the system that we choose to have. And for me, that system should be more in line with that sense of empathy that we can work with. You know, right now we have a system that, you know, you talk about the issues that the VA had. You talk about issues with, you know, people who have gone through Social Security disability and you know, face rejections and face problems like that. And for me, you know, the system should be set up where, you know, there are people that have abused it in the past. But we shouldn't let that, we should spend more money on enforcement with that stuff. We can do more to make sure that works out. We can change what that system looks like for us because we as citizens own it. A government system we own. You know, we can negotiate for lower rates together. We can negotiate to make sure that people are getting covered. You know, and I think it's, again, it comes down to, you know, folks who maybe haven't experienced this kind of stuff. You know, anybody out there who's lived with a pre-existing condition, who knows somebody who's lived with a pre-existing condition, who knows somebody who lives with a condition, regardless of if it was pre-existing, you know, something that has come on from, you know, like a heart attack and, you know, it's rendered them, you know, this is a system where they're going to wonder where it is. They're going to wonder who's looking out for them. And one of the things I always say to folks is that, you know, the reason I do believe so much in the power of good government and government that works for people is, you know, it's not easy because of the way that those lines are drawn and, you know, systems that we've set up with gerrymandering. It's not easy to replace your congressman, but it's a heck of a lot easier to replace your congressman than it is to replace someone on the board of a Fortune 500 company that's making money in that sense. So, you know, we have to remember that we own the systems we create. We own that. And for me, it's, you know, making sure that we're owning the best kind of healthcare system in this country.
From what I know about Parkinson's, which is not a tremendous amount, but I understand it's a progressive disease.
Yes. Which is in line with my politics.
Well, there you go. Same name, exactly. People who get a cold, people who get the flu, people who even get cancer, the hope is I can get past this and there'll be a day when I'm either in remission, don't have it, am over the flu, as minute as that is compared to certain forms of cancer. There's no surgery at this point that cures Parkinson's, and you never get better.
Correct.
Ever.
Yep.
And the pill you're taking, you say, was created in 1967 before men walked on the moon.
Yep.
So knowing that you will never be better, you will not be better tomorrow than you were today.
Mm-hmm.
How do you coalesce that in your mind? How do you deal with that?
It's an opportunity every day to make a difference. And I mean that. Like, I have that conversation a lot. There was times when I would be initially going through the process and kind of struggling. And, you know, you're going through a lot of things, you know. I used to be able to do very physical types of jobs that I can't do. You know, I was a grocery manager who was, you know, working third shifts, throwing trucks in the dairy cooler. Like, you know, that's just something I've always done. I've always been, you know, someone who could physically take care of things if I had to. And for me, it was kind of a situation of being able to, you know, again, have access to materials to help me kind of figure that stuff out. Every day I look at it as this could be. And I say it like that, it could be the best that I ever feel for the rest of my life. And I want to make the most of it every single day. You know, you find such an appreciation, you know, and that's the thing. It's like right now I feel pretty good. You know, I've got high morale. It feels nice to be here, you know, being able to do things and to be doing something I love. And for me, it just comes down to that fact of like, what am I doing today to make a difference? What am I doing today to improve the lives of people like, you know, who like me, who are living this. And that's something I've also noticed is, you know, I've had some people reach out from the Parkinson's community around the country, just being like, I think it's awesome what you're doing. Like, you're not going to take this kind of just sitting down, which is funny because, you know, there's lots of physical therapy stuff for Parkinson's people saying you should be moving around. So, you know, I'm out there moving around and trying to make a difference. So for me, it's I try to be a positive person. I try to have a mindset of helpfulness and mindfulness and what can I do. So that's what I do pretty much every day. And it's daunting at times, but I feel pretty good.
I'm sure there are people out there listening who might have Parkinson's or certainly know somebody who has it. What is the progression of the disease? I say the only two people we've seen it in, I think, nationally are Muhammad Ali and Michael J. Fox. Muhammad Ali only lived about 20 years with it and died in his early 70s, and he was an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Michael J. Fox, I think late 30s, was diagnosed, and I say early 50s, we don't see him anymore, I think, because it's progressed to a bad point.
Yeah.
I think Muhammad Ali couldn't even speak at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Is this your future, or is it different in everybody?
So part of me, it is different in everybody in terms of the time frame of how it comes on. You know, it depends on how your medication responds, you know. And for me, I'm fortunate enough that so when Michael J. Fox was diagnosed, he was 29. And he was diagnosed at a time when there wasn't as many resources out there. Like there wasn't a Michael J. Fox for Michael J. Fox. I have a Michael J. Fox who's out there raising money. I have a Michael J. Fox who's brought awareness to this. So I'm hopeful that, you know, long term, you know, there's opportunities for me down the road that we may not even have thought of yet. And that's part of, you know, a good healthcare system is making sure that, you know, we're not profiting off of treatments, but we're looking for cures and we're looking for ways that we can go out there and do things. So for me, you know, I don't worry about that part, you know, because I've got a loving wife and a happy life. And I know that, you know, I'll be comfortable. And I know that, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, whatever the future holds, because, you know, it may be different for me now, but it's still my life and it's still something that I have control over. And, you know, for Muhammad Ali, in terms of, you know, his complications, you know, part of that comes from when you start to lose your ability to chew and swallow and things like that. I'm nowhere near those areas yet. So for me, you know, I have a bit of time where I can be what I am right now. And, you know, my mind works and, you know, I have a lot of people that care for me and are excited about what I'm doing. And I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it kind of came together in a way where I'm able to have a conversation, you know, on radio stations and as a candidate for Congress about the quality of our healthcare in this country.
Certainly. And I think we all always say, no matter what is going on in our life, that today could be it. We could be hit by a bus tomorrow. That's always the term we use.
Yeah.
But most of us aren't hit by a bus.
Yes.
And
bus drivers are pretty good.
Yeah, they've become better. and the end result is, you know, today, barring a big miracle in medicine, which could happen,
Yeah.
You know what will end your life.
Yeah.
Did that change you in any way?
I told my wife at one point, you know, it didn't, in a sense. You know, I still have the same vision of, you know, being able to live by a lake somewhere, you know, with my small town life in that sense. It's just sometimes I'm a little bit shakier in that vision, you know, and for me, that's fine. You know, I still get to be me, and I still get to go out there and have the passions that I have and care about the things that I care about. And, you know, that's one of those things where I'm happy to be out there and showing people who maybe are going through this for the first time or finding out, you know, or unsure, you know, in those situations. Like, I'm happy to be out there telling them, like, you can still do things that you want to do. You can still live the life you want to live, and you can be happy. And as long as people are happy, I think that you can get through a lot. And as long as you have a good support circle, you can get through a lot of things in life. And I think that's the most important part.
Since the diagnosis, what's the best part?
I think that there's a couple things. I feel like I appreciate a lot of things, you know, going to that sense of, you know, what's going on in your life. You know, I was notoriously fearful of mosquitoes as a kid. I used to always get bit like 20 times. Now I just kind of, you know, will sit outside and enjoy it. Not the biting, but, you know, being outside in the nice weather. I think that I've gotten a lot better about telling folks how appreciative I am sometimes of what they do, just little things. And they've been that way towards me too. And, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, every time I see somebody who I haven't seen in a while, they're always really excited. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, I feel like in a way it gives you an outlook. You could either be, and there's a lot of people, you know, and it's a warranted way where people could end up feeling very down and wanting to shudder away. I've never felt that. I've felt like I want to be out there more and I want to see people more. And I think that's been a really positive thing.
You're up today. You're running for office. You have a positive attitude. But what's been the worst part?
The worst part has just been learning those physical limitations. Absolutely the worst part. You know, I had a job at the probate court that was a very detailed, and by detailed I mean in sense of dexterity kind of job. I loved that job. That was a wonderful job, being able to work with people every day like that. You know, having to learn those situations again, having to experience that sense of loss was difficult, because I'm always been a doer in that sense. I've always been somebody who wants to do something that I can. And to sort of have seen people, you know, and I guess this is where it kind of goes to the sense of, like, to sort of have to, you know, rely more on people than I had anticipated sometimes. You know, I like to be somebody that can be counted on in a situation. For me, it comes down to, you know, I'm now relying sometimes on people more because it's a lot easier and they're happy to do it. And it's sort of a situation, you know, nationally that I always, you know, kind of correlate to this healthcare stuff. Like, I'm happy to help people. And so for me, that's always been the kind of the hard part, was getting to that sense of, you know, being okay with the idea that, you know, sometimes I'm going to need a little bit more assistance than I would have. But at the end of the day, I think it's improved my quality of life in that sense.
A lot of people always say, no matter what the illness is, that it's worse on the caregiver than the person who has it.
Yes.
You're married.
Yes.
Youngly.
Yes.
Married.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever think about that?
I think about that a lot.
And what is do you come to the conclusion of?
Well, the funny part is that my wife and I very much have a relationship that is built on wanting to help the other person already. Like, one of the jokes that she always used to say is being with me was kind of like having Christmas every day, in the sense that she would mention something to me and I would go do it or try to find it. So, you know, for me, it's been very, I don't know. I've always had a very good relationship in that sense. And so for me, it hasn't changed too much, but I always tell her, I'm like, I feel so bad for you sometimes having to do that. But, you know, she's like, no, I'm happy to help. I'm happy to be pitching in. You know, and she's my biggest supporter. She's my biggest fan, my biggest champion on stuff. Her parents are too, you know, my parents and her parents. You know, it's one of those situations where like everybody is, you know, very happy to help. And, you know, when I first, got diagnosed, my father-in-law came out with this, you know, he always looked for a good reason to need to go to Lowe's or something. He came out with, you know, a toolkit and installed a brand new rail on the back porch to make sure that I was going to be okay. You know, and my grandmother, who also needs to use rails sometimes, she's very appreciative of that too. So, you know, that's just been the response, but I am forever grateful and forever indebted, every day to having a partner in my life who, you know, is looking out for me. She's always looking out for me in that sense. So, you know, I understand that it's hard on the caregiver. I really appreciate though that, you know, she has that kind of, commitment to service. And, you know, it's just a reflection of what kind of a person she is.
Representative Jordan has been in this district a while. As I said earlier, he usually wins with 60% of the vote. You agree this is a Republican district?
Absolutely.
Can you win?
I think I can. I think it's worth trying either way, but I do think I can win. And I think part of that is, you know, there's a lot of people out there that look at the national news and, you know, they identify as Republicans or Democrats and they live in that circle. You know, I always tell folks that there's going to be people out there who this administration or this particular congressman have felt let down by. And what I want to give them is, I always joke about, it's like kicking the tires on a Democrat for a sense of, you know, a local style Democrat. You know, it's one of those where I want to talk to the person who voted for Barack Obama, who then voted for Donald Trump, who, you know, is thinking about the way that the country is going and isn't happy with that. And I'm not afraid to have those conversations with people because I believe what I say.
You will get your chance at some point. If Representative Jordan was here today, what would you say to him?
I think part of it, though, is that, you know, he and I just have a philosophical difference on the role of government. And that's what it comes down to. You know, the representative has a very, you know, limited view of what government should be doing. He references often, you know, personal responsibility and community responsibility. And I can respect his views on that. However, you know, my views are different. And I think that a lot of things that people in this district take advantage of, like the Affordable Care Act, you know, having a child on health insurance until they're 26, you know, not being discriminated against because of a pre-existing condition. These are things that he wants to do away with on a theoretical level, that he has taken action to do away with. And I don't agree with that. And I think that, you know, if we have a conversation about that throughout the course of the next couple of months, you know, I think we can change minds. You know, and that's part of the heroin part of my campaign, the heroin epidemic that's going through our district, the state in particular. You know, it's one of those where Medicaid expansion is helping rural communities and first responders. For me, it's flexing that empathy muscle. For him, it's a view of, you know, personal responsibility. I look at it as, you know, if somebody in a community that's 20 minutes from a hospital has an overdose in a situation, we should try to help them if we can. And right now, the system is in place to help them. We're wanting to do away with that system, you know, and I think that it's easy to sit back and say, well, you know, they should just die. That's a deep thing to say, but that's what it is. And for me, it says, well, no, we need to be able to give them a chance. It's part of that discussion of addiction and with mental and other types of health care. And then with housing, you know, there's a lot of people that purchased homes, specifically with those predatory lendings, that, you know, the congressman thinks that the programs that are in place to help those people keep a home is not something government should be doing. Government is doing it, though. It has been doing it for some time. And, you know, the congressman feels that it's not in government's place to have that role. If they can't afford the house, they shouldn't keep it. Again, it's an easy thing to say, but at the end of the day, you're evicting a family. And I can't, you know, as a homeowner, and I'm sure there's a lot of homeowners listening who have, you know, gone into the bank, and it's a nerve-wracking process and it's a hard process. And if somebody tells you for a family of five that you can have a 4-bedroom home with 2 baths, you're gonna go with it. You're gonna say, okay, I believe you. It's easy in hindsight to say you should have known better because we're trusting one another. And this is a situation where we have, part of that situation is we've continued to put profit in some cases over public good. And these are roles that government is currently doing that he and I would have a direct sense of, you know, a disagreement over. You know, hopefully it would be a respectful disagreement, but it's a disagreement. And I think that people in this district would be open to the idea of, hey, I like those programs. You know, I'm not somebody who's only been in political office. I'm not somebody who's, you know, had these high education degrees in that sense. You know, I'm looking at it from a sense of, you know, someone who has had to work 60 hours a week, as someone who has worked in freezers where you have to wear gloves, you know, someone who's had to take a wedding ring off while you're working in the cooler because you don't want to get sour milk smell on it. You know, these are real things. You know, this isn't just legislation. And I think that my story is a similar story to a lot of people. And I know that people want to say and look from the perspective of, you know, I can do it on my own. But if we have the help available, and if there are people who are going to be doing it, why aren't we taking advantage of it like we should?
33 years old, very young to run for office, having Parkinson's disease for the last 3 years. There are a lot of people who get up in the morning and say, I just don't want to get out of bed today. What do you say to those people?
Sleep in a little bit and then get up. You know, it's one of those where, you know, there's... Sometimes people need rest days. Sometimes people need, but I just look at it as, you know, find your passion in life or whatever that is. If it's a hobby, if it's, you know, I've had more hobbies than I would care to admit. You know, I like all types of different things. But there's always something out there to get you going. There's always something out there that's going to make you happy and make you doing it. Some, for some people, it's, you know, it's as simple as good conversations. It's a good book. It's sitting on the front porch and having your coffee. You know, it's different pleasures in life. You know, but once you find who that is and yourself and you have that conversation with yourself, you're ready to do it.
You came in today with a cane, yep. So just as a precautionary method. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of 33-year-olds with canes.
That's true.
Do you ever say, why me? Or is it always up like this?
It's always up, usually. There's are times, so the funny part is I had a much less nicer cane. And my parents purchased me that cane for Christmas, which I thought was a very funny. I thought, you know, it looks like a candy cane at a difference. And then you get this, you know, this big, thick cane. You know, and to be fair, you know, you do go through that period early on. But for me, you know, I've turned that corner. And part of it is having that flexibility to look at life and figure out what your purpose is and what makes you happy. For me, you know, it was kind of being able to find things that I love and focus on the things that I love and do the things that I love, and allow me and my wife to still have a good life and live in a nice house and, you know, have a small community with, you know, 3 pizza shops and 2 stoplights and Chinese food. You know, it's pretty good.
Do you believe in your lifetime you'll see a cure for this?
Yes, I do. I hope so.
And if you don't?
Well, you know, it'll be at the end of it anyways, and I won't know. So, you know, it's one of those where I would still be happy for anybody else who comes after me. You know, if I'm 70 years old and they find a cure, you know, some people would probably look at that and be like, oh, come on, really? But hey, you know, we're moving forward. We are always moving forward. And that's, you know, that's part of how I look at everything is, you know, if we're not doing something different, if we're not pushing the envelope, if we're not, you know, if we're just comfortable where we are all the time, we're going to be stagnant. So for me, like I like to think that we're going to find a cure. I like to, you know, think that people are going to do that. And, you know, I'm hopeful because they're starting to figure out more and more every day, you know, about what Parkinson's is and how it works with people. And I think that, you know, by being out there and being someone who's unabashed, you know, about what my situation is and my struggles, you know, I think that that's going to empower more people in the same way.
The newspaper article, basically, the headline was person with Parkinson's running for office. Do you like that? Obviously, it's part of the story.
Yeah.
But do you like being known as that?
Yeah, in a sense, I'm okay with it, you know, and that's part of it, too, is it's who I am. It's who I am. You know, I'm a person with Parkinson's who's running for Congress. And, you know, for me, it's, you know, in fact, what some of my campaign literature says that just a kid with a cane changing politics, you know, and for me, if, you know, it's going to allow me to have different conversations with people, you know, it's a disadvantage, but it's also a conversation starter. You know, I can relate to a lot of people who have experienced Parkinson's disease in their life. You know, but I'm not ashamed of it. I'm not, afraid of having it or what people will think, because I know that by going out there and being a positive person and by showing, you know, proactiveness and by showing what a good vision is and taking that, you know, and living that dream in that sense, you know, I'm doing good. So for me, you know, if I inspire one person to feel like they can still make a difference regardless of what their pre-existing condition is, you know, if I inspire somebody who maybe hasn't thought about, you know, going after it to do it, I've done something good.
What's a typical day like with Parkinson's disease?
Oh, you know, it can vary. You know, I take four pills a day. So my day is kind of based around that. You have to watch when you eat because your protein can bind with your pill and it can make you kind of sick. So, you know, it's just kind of figuring that kind of stuff out. You know, as long as you're staying active, you know, there's a lot of Brian Grant, who used to play in the NBA, also has young onset Parkinson's. And he has a foundation that's called Shake It Till We Make It. And part of it is, you know, making sure you're doing your exercise, you're taking care of your body. You know, they have lots of courses for that. I do. I haven't done it recently, but, you know, because I've been so busy with my, you know, I get my own form of cardio that I didn't used to get. But I you know, my wife had brought me home from the library, which is a great perk of being married to a librarian. You constantly have an endless resource of books, you know, yoga for Parkinson's, you know, to kind of help with your balance and things like that. So it's not that different from somebody else's day in terms of, you know, the big picture of stuff.
Knowing this, having this at such a young age, what do you know for sure? What do you know about life for sure now that you can impart to somebody?
The one thing is, you know, you want to enjoy it. You want to make sure you're doing things that you love, and you want to make sure you're giving yourself time to rest. That's part of it too, is, you know, last night I was up in Lorain County, which is also part of our district. It's a 2-hour drive from here. And I wanted to make sure that I gave myself time to rest, you know. So today it's going to be, you know, this interview, and I have another event later tonight. But then tomorrow, you know, I'm going to be resting up.
Do you have a faith?
I have gone to Catholic school, and I do believe in a sense of purpose. For me, it's, you know, I've always kind of gone back and forth in that agnostic sense. I feel like I've always been having a conversation in terms of how you feel and what your purpose is. And for me, you know, part of it was having this disease, you know, and I've kind of felt it before. You know, and I don't know if there's actually a label to put on it, but for me, it's like, you know, you feel like you want to live your life to its best. You want to serve others. You want to have a sense of purpose. You feel called to doing different things. And so for me, like, I'm not someone who slaps a label on it and just says, this is what I am. I feel like I've been having, you know, and I talk to my wife about this sometimes every couple of months, it seems to come up, but I talk to her about, like, you know, I just feel like I'm having this ongoing conversation. And I think that's healthy in that sense of being able to, you know, constantly think about it, you know, in that sense. But,
today, do you believe in a heaven and a hell?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I do. And that's one of those situations for me where, you know, I like to think that people who have lived their lives in a positive way that is based on serving others have a afterlife to be rewarded with.
Do you ever say, God, why me? Why the Parkinson's?
No, because I think that you get picked for things. You don't ask for it. You know, and that's part of it too, is, you know, and I say that as a sense of somebody who does believe in, you know, a sense of heaven and hell and does believe in a higher power, but has that agnosticness about it. But I've had that for a while, and I've always been someone who questions that, and I'm open about that. You know, I think that there's a lot of people who it's very easy to just put that into a mason jar and pull it out when they need to. For me, it's that ongoing conversation.
With 30 seconds left, finish this sentence. Andrew Mackey is
someone who cares for people.
That's a good way to put it. Andrew Mackey, Democratic candidate for 4th Congressional District, running against incumbent Republican Jim Jordan. Fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for coming in today, Andrew.
Thank you very much for having me, Scott.
This is Scott Spears on this day, heading for the dugout.
But I'll tell you, Scott, it's one of the easiest things.